I think with the multitude of weapons combined with the ego of a Jerry and Stephen Jones who want to show that they made the right decision by drafting a CeeDee Lamb, all of those things are going to put Dak Prescott in a position to be that dark horse that we're alluding to for league MVP honors. I'm rolling with Dak Prescott.
That was Stephen A. Smith, joining the chorus of analysts, including yours truly, who have hyped the Dallas Cowboys this offseason. But while America's team has been widely praised for its signings and draft picks, Dallas has yet to sign its quarterback, Dak Prescott, to a long-term contract. Today, Bill Barnwell joins the show to explain whether Prescott deserves a mega deal. Then, as people across the country continue to protest racial inequality and police violence, NFL linebacker Brandon Marshall joins us to discuss why he protested those issues back in 2016 alongside Colin Kaepernick and what's changed since then. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Wednesday, June 3rd. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Mina.
Bill Barnwell is a senior NFL writer for ESPN. So, Bill, the Dak Prescott contract story, which feels like it's been a story now forever, is careening towards a conclusion. Careening might be the wrong word. Inching towards a conclusion. You open your column by calling it the highest stakes game of chicken in NFL history. Why is that?
Well, Mina, we could be looking at one of the largest contracts in NFL history for a player, depending on how the Dak Prescott negotiations go. And similar to the Tom Brady situation a few months ago, we have a deadline. We have a day. I know that for me, I am keeping my calendar open on July 15th, right around 4 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to be sitting in my apartment waiting to hear about a Dak Prescott extension, because with the Cowboys, we know they usually take these things to the last second before coming to terms on a deal, with Ezekiel Elliott as a recent example.
Finally, Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys reached an agreement on a 6-year, $90 million extension. And according to ESPN's Ed Werder, the deal has $50 million guaranteed.
How rare is it for this sort of game of chicken to happen with a quarterback?
I mean, it almost never happens. Teams and quarterbacks almost always find common ground on a deal before they have to get to the franchise tag, which is why, since 2011, there have been two quarterbacks who have been hit with the franchise tag, Drew Brees of the New Orleans Saints and Kirk Cousins of Washington, who's a quarterback who might figure into these discussions a little more prominently as this goes on.
Bill, Dak is often compared to the other quarterbacks drafted at the same time as him, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, especially Wentz. Both of those QBs signed contract extensions after just 3 years in the NFL with very little drama. Why do you think those deals were negotiated more easily?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's about time and the time away from free agency for these quarterbacks when they're signing these deals. Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, both first-round picks. Because of that, they have five-year rookie contracts, a four-year base deal, and then a fifth-year option. Really, these deals are bargains no matter how you cut it, but because they're bargains, these quarterbacks are signing deals quicker. So with Wentz, when he signed his extension, which was a four-year $128 million deal, on paper, that's $32 million a year. With Prescott, because he was a fourth-round pick, he got paid less during his rookie deal, but crucially, he did not have a fifth-year option available on his contract. So once the Cowboys got to that third season, instead of Prescott being 2 years away from free agency, which was the case with Wentz and Goff, he was only 1 year away from free agency. And the Cowboys did try to offer Prescott an extension, but seeing what was out there, he declined that offer, and honestly, it's the best thing for him financially to do so.
So what you're saying is while Dak Prescott's made significantly less than his peers because he was a fourth round pick, it's also given him more leverage.
Yes. Typically, if you're a rookie coming out, you want the benefit of a first round pick because it's guaranteed money and significant guaranteed money. Wentz made about $28 million over his rookie deal. Goff was in the same space. Prescott made closer to $4 million. But getting to free agency a year quicker is a much more advantageous situation if you're a guy who is as good as those first-round picks. And I think that is the case here with Dak Prescott.
So let's talk about his actual contract. There has been a lot of speculation about what he has asked for, what the Cowboys have counteroffered. We don't know the exact figures or terms. What do we know about what both sides want?
You know, I mean, I don't think the salary here is really what the issue is over. It's not a matter of how much he's going to make per year. I think everyone kind of agrees it's somewhere in the $34 to $36 million range. The issue is really more about length. For Dak Prescott, he wants to get to that third contract, the contract after this one, as quickly as possible, because we know that the NFL's TV deals are going to go up when they're negotiated in 2021, in 2022, and possibly 2023. Most likely, pretty dramatically, that will trickle down to the players, that'll trickle down to the salary cap. For the Cowboys side of things, though, historically, they're a team that wants to sign players to big money contracts, but for as long as possible. And of course, in this case, they want to keep Prescott away from free agency for as long as possible by handing him a 5 or 6 year deal.
So as this is all unfolded, there have been reports, rumors about what Dak Prescott has actually been asking for. Big numbers that have spurred some backlash from fans, Cowboys fans, accusing him of, you know, demanding too much money, saying he should take a discount. What do you make of that?
I think people need to be realistic about how much of a bargain Dak Prescott has been over the last 4 years, where he's made $3.6 million combined over his last four seasons in a league where your Eli Mannings, your Philip Riverses, your Nick Foleses are getting north of $20 million per year. It's entirely possible that the Cowboys have made about $75 million of surplus value or profit on Dak Prescott's performance over the last four seasons. And the Cowboys, by the way, are not a team that is known for giving out discounts to their players. This is an organization where you look at every big contract they've handed out over the past few years. By the average annual salary, it's been one of the biggest contracts in all of football. Ezekiel Elliott has the biggest multi-year contract by average annual salary for a running back. Same thing for Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, when they signed their deals, DeMarcus Lawrence, and Amari Cooper, the second largest average annual salaries on their deals. So I don't buy the idea that Dak should be taking a discount, because he's already been a huge bargain for the Cowboys, and the Cowboys are not a team that ask anybody to take discounts before Dak Prescott.
If both sides don't come to an agreement by that July deadline, what does Dak Prescott gain from playing on the tag this year?
What Dak Prescott gains is that he is a year closer to being a truly unrestricted free agent. The Cowboys can franchise him next year at about $37.7 million, which is maybe a little bit extreme, but not out of the question that the Cowboys would do it for a second time. You can't really franchise him a third time. It would cost the Cowboys over $54 million for 1 year of Prescott, which just is not going to happen realistically. So with Prescott, if he wants to maximize his money, not signing a long-term deal is the way to go. It's playing the franchise tag game, going year to year, and waiting for that unrestricted free agent opportunity to happen. Obviously, the Cowboys don't want that to be the case.
You described it as a game of chicken. I think we can see what the risk is from the Cowboys side, as you just described it. From Dak's side, I suppose it's either injury or having his performance decline this year to where his value actually decreases?
It's possible. I mean, it certainly could happen. He does have the insurance, which should help against the possibility of a serious injury. I see very little reason to think that Dak Prescott's performance is likely to decline. If anything, I see a reason to think that Dak Prescott might be in line to have his best season as a pro in 2020.
All right, after the break, let's talk about that, how Dak might perform and how he's performed so far for the Dallas Cowboys. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Bill, something that comes up a lot when we talk about whether or not teams should pay quarterbacks these gigantic mega salaries is this debate over whether or not you can win a Super Bowl if you devote a sizable chunk of your cap to the position. Do you think that's true?
I do think it's true. And I'm going to crib from one of my favorite football analysts in saying so, in Mina Kimes, and pointing out, you know, that a lot of quarterbacks who are making a lot of money have won Super Bowls in the past or have come up narrowly short for reasons that have nothing to do with them. Matt Ryan is the classic example, a guy who was getting paid top-tier quarterback money, won a league MVP, was awesome throughout the playoffs, and for all the reasons the Falcons lost that Super Bowl to the Patriots, Matt Ryan was not very high on the list. I do think that this idea that it's good to not pay a quarterback all that much money in winning a Super Bowl is really just Tom Brady. I mean, Tom Brady is the example of, you know, the guy who is making less typically than what he can make in the open market. And the Patriots have won a lot of Super Bowls. And I think that's because Tom Brady is very good, not because there is some sort of cap mechanism there that makes the most sense. Now, naturally, Dak Prescott has to be good for the Cowboys to win a Super Bowl, regardless of how much they're paying him.
So is he good?
Yes, I do think Dak Prescott is a very good quarterback. I actually, looking at the numbers, they can win a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott at quarterback, whether he makes $5 million, $35 million, $40 million. He is that caliber of quarterback that they can win regardless of what he's being paid. Mina, you know, you go through the numbers for Dak Prescott, the idea that he's just an average guy, someone easily replaced by Andy Dalton, for example, or someone the Cowboys can just draft a replacement for, just not supported by reality, by just about any possible measure I can find when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks, whether it's the really simple ones like touchdown interception ratio or passing yards, completion percentage, or the advanced metrics, your QBRs, your EPAs, your completion percentage above expectations, all the nerdy stats we can come up with. Dak Prescott is a top 10 quarterback, closer to a top 5 guy than being in the bottom of the top 10. And on top of that, he is an incredibly valuable runner.
Prescott rolls away from pressure, looking, going to tuck it, going to run for it, and he's got it. Dak Prescott uses his feet.
A guy who is in the top 5 in every rushing stat for quarterbacks over the last 4 seasons. So I don't see really the fallback in paying Dak Prescott. He's just as someone who has pushed the Cowboys offense forward over the last 4 years.
Bill, Dak's skeptics will argue that he doesn't deserve to be paid like a top quarterback because he doesn't have the record of a top quarterback, particularly in the playoffs. What would you say to that?
I would say that I don't think people are paying attention to the comparables from that draft class. Of course, Dak Prescott, as we mentioned, in the same draft class as Carson Wentz and Jared Goff. Carson Wentz, who got paid a lot of money, has played one quarter in the playoffs over the last 4 years due to injuries. Won a Super Bowl, but of course that was Nick Foles. Jared Goff has gone 2-2. I will say he has not played especially well. His passer rating in the playoffs in those 4 games is 73.6, which is very bad. Dak Prescott is 1-2 in the postseason. Not ideal, but look at one of those 2 losses against the Packers as a rookie. The Cowboys were down 28-13 entering the fourth quarter. Dak Prescott leads 1 touchdown drive.
Elliott behind Prescott in the gun. Snap is back. Shows it to him. Pulls it back. Flips it over the middle to Wooden. Touchdown in the middle of the end zone.
Leads a 2nd touchdown drive.
3rd and 2 at the Green Bay 7. Beasley right slot. They're blitzing. Play fake. Throws it over the middle to Bryant. And he's got it into the end zone for a touchdown.
Runs in the 2-pointer to tie the game up. The Cowboys defense gives up the lead with a field goal.
And it is gone! Yes! It is gone! It is gone!
Dak Prescott drives the Cowboys again into field goal range with 1:33 left.
Snap is back, kicks away. 52 yards. Dan Bailey equals the lead. first field goal in Cowboy playoff history, and we're tied at 31.
And the Cowboys still managed to blow that lead before regulation was over to Aaron Rodgers.
Rodgers back and peels out left and stands and looks and rolls and runs and throws it down the field, and it's caught at the 34-yard line by Jared Cook with 3 seconds left.
So I understand that he's 1-2. That's not an ideal record, but I don't think one of those losses was really Dak Prescott's fault. So I do think of those three guys, even though he has not made it to a Super Bowl, Dak Prescott has the most impressive playoff performances relative to those other two players.
The other most common critique of Dak is that his success depends on context. He came into the league in a great situation with arguably the best offensive line in football, a top young running back in Ezekiel Elliott, and then he struggled as a passer at times until Amari Cooper showed up. Do you think there's any veracity to that?
Yes and no. I mean, it's funny, John Perelin, one of our colleagues in ESPN Stats and Info, looked at this exact premise and found that Dak Prescott has a better QBR without Ezekiel Elliott on the field as opposed to having the star running back on the field next to him. Prescott's also been very effective when the Cowboys have gone with an empty backfield, which eliminates the possibility of a Zeke run. So obviously I'd rather have Zeke in my backfield than not have him if I'm Dak Prescott, but it's not as if Prescott's numbers fall off a cliff without Zeke on the field in the backfield. And in terms of the receiver argument, of course Amari Cooper helped, but his receiving core was not especially good before that point. I mean, in 2016 and 2017, his wideouts were Dez Bryant, who was not the same at that point after coming back from a foot injury, Jason Witten, who was in his mid-30s, Terrence Williams, who nobody in football wanted after he was cut by the Cowboys, Cole Beasley, who was the slot receiver, who was an effective slot receiver, but not much. Even in 2018, Williams hit IR. His receivers were Cole Beasley, Michael Gallup, who was a rookie at the time, Allen Hurns, and Tavon Austin. So he had very little at receiver in 2018 before adding Amari Cooper. He's made the receivers who have been on the Cowboys in 2018 and 2019 better.
So what is a legitimate critique of Dak Prescott?
There is an element of the game where Dak has struggled, and Perelin mentioned this in his piece. Prescott is just 5-13 against teams who finished the year with 10 or more wins, so the best teams in football. His QBR in those games, just 55.3. In other games, 72.9. That's the difference between the second best mark in football and something closer to league average. And everyone's worse against those top teams, but Wentz is 9-11, so a better record, and a better QBR, 58.3. Goff is 8-12 in those games, QBR 51.8 below Prescott. So I don't think it's enough to disqualify Prescott from getting a big contract, but it is something to watch for as something he can improve upon in the years to come.
All right, Counselor Barnwell, you've presented your case. Now I'd like to ask you to switch hats. What would you do here if you were the GM of the Dallas Cowboys?
I would sign Dak Prescott to an extension right now because the price is only going to go up. The quarterback market we've seen over the last few years, it never goes down in value. It only increases in how much the top quarterbacks cost. Deshaun Watson is going to sign an extension soon. Patrick Mahomes is going to sign an enormous extension soon. And I mentioned those salary cap concerns about how the cap could be going up dramatically in the years to come. So if I'm Jerry Jones, if I'm Stephen Jones, I think you want to sign Prescott to an extension. You want to get as many years as possible on that contract, even if it means giving him $36, $37 million a year. I think that having a quarterback of Dak Prescott's ability under contract for as long as possible is the most important thing you can do if you're running a football team.
What do you think they will do?
That's a different hat. I think they will do something similar to that. I just think at the end of the day, this is a team that recognizes they don't really have an alternative. I mean, Andy Dalton is not the same caliber of player. Even if they gave the job to Andy Dalton and he broke out, Andy Dalton would get a raise. We could see the contracts from Ryan Tannehill and Nick Foles as an example of guys who, you know, broke out with 1 year of success and then got paid a significant amount of money. It just is unlikely that Dak Prescott is going, or that Andy Dalton would be an effective replacement and stay cheap for a long period of time. I just think that it makes the most sense for everyone involved to get a big deal done. I think that's what's going to happen probably sometime around 3:30 p.m. on July 15th.
Thanks so much, Bill.
Thanks, Mina.
Coming up, former Broncos linebacker, activist, and friend of Colin Kaepernick, Brandon Marshall, joins the show. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Here's another story I want you to know. Brandon Marshall is an NFL linebacker and Super Bowl champion who spent most of his career with the Denver Broncos. He has been outspoken on issues of racial equality, reform in policing, social justice, ever since he joined his friend and former college teammate Colin Kaepernick in kneeling to call attention to those issues before games during the national anthem back in 2016. Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
As good as anyone can be these days. Before we get to what's happening, I want to go back to 2016, which feels like a million years ago. You were on the Broncos back then, and as I described earlier, you joined in Colin's protest, kneeling before games.
Meanwhile, during the NFL season opener, the Broncos, Brandon Marshall took a knee during the anthem. As
for the game, how was that received at the time?
It wasn't received well at all. It was, you know, we got so much backlash and a lot of hate. You know, a lot of people, you know, said, you know, we were disrespecting the military and the police officers. But it was a lot of people that weren't even in the military. When somebody who was an ex-military member told Colin a better way, he was okay with that. It was received in a terrible, you know, we were looked at as spoiled and, you know, received threats. People came to, you know, my facility and burned one of my shirts. You know, it was there's a lot of backlash. It was terrible.
You posted a letter you received on Instagram at the time that I remember just being so shocked by when I saw it.
Yeah, you know, I got a letter that was sent to the facility, and it was addressed from Mrs. Johnson's seventh grade class. And I'm opening a letter thinking I'm about to get a beautiful letter for some kids. And, you know, I opened the letter to, you know, a lot of derogatory terms and a lot of racist terms, calling me the N-word, you know, all kind of other terms, jigaboo. And, you know, and then at the end it said, we're going to, you know, watch your back. You're going to, you know, be put in a wheelchair. You know, that was one of the more shocking things I've seen, because instead of trying to understand, you know, why I may feel how I feel, or, you know, why I may feel strongly about these issues, you know, that they didn't even understand. They just decided to threaten me and, you know, threaten my life, basically. So that was it was very eye opening.
You lost endorsements as well, correct?
Yeah, I lost two endorsements. I lost, you know, CenturyLink and then the Air Academy Credit Union. They both put out statements and they said they don't condone this behavior. Then they dropped me, you know, they dropped me from their sponsorship. And, you know, it was just like a snowball effect.
Who supported you at the time?
My family. You know, my family supported me. And I had a lot of support from the community as well. For the people of color, man, the Black community, they supported me a lot. I got a lot of love from them. You know, my teammates supported me. You know, my position coach supported me. I got a lot of love. There was a lot of hate, but there was a lot of love as well.
So flash forward to today, protests have sprung up across the country in the wake of the killings of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, so many others. People are protesting the very issues you guys are trying to bring attention to. Before we get to that connection, what has it been like for you watching what's happened this last week?
Man, it's been crazy because everything has come full circle. You know, the issues that we were, you know, harping upon and we tried to peacefully demonstrate. And, you know, to see this monstrosity that happened to George Floyd, I think that just ignited a fire in everybody. And now you see everybody caring about this issue. You see everybody rising up and protesting, not just people of color, but everybody, white individuals as well. You know, it's kind of sad to see that somebody else had to die, but, you know, now people understand it's an actual issue. And I don't, you know, condone the looting and the violence, but, you know, I understand, you know, people's frustrations.
Brandon, a number of NFL teams have issued statements expressing, you know, anti-racist sentiments, mentioning George Floyd. Very few have specifically mentioned the police. Commissioner Goodell weighed in as well. How do you regard these comments from teams in the NFL, given what happened in 2016 and also the fact that Colin Kaepernick himself is not in the league?
I mean, this protesting started in your league, right? It started in your league. You know, how come you guys didn't, you know, instead of looking at us as rogues, how come you didn't try to understand us? You know, instead of just trying to find ways to make us stand up, you know, how come you didn't try to understand, you know, the issues that were affecting us, right? So it started in your league, and now you're, I guess, trying to do some damage control and make some statements. And, you know, I saw the 49ers put Black Lives Matter, and I'm like, that's crazy because, you know, Cap was trying to, you know, your star quarterback, one of the faces of the league, had an issue and you did nothing. You know, I'm not even sure if you really truly cared about it. So, you know, just when I see some of it, you know, I hope it's genuine. When I hope the league and the higher ups had a change of heart, but, you know, it just makes me, you know, wonder why, you know, they looked at us how they did in 2016.
What would you like to see the NFL and these teams do now?
Man, I would like for them to be okay with if we do decide to demonstrate. You know, that's one. I would like to see them, you know, be okay with that, right? You know, I would like to see some form of action had as far as, you know, criminal justice reform and you know, even justice, you know, anything they can do, because I feel like all four officers should be arrested because it's an accessory to murder. I feel like the statement they put out was a little vague. You know, it was just kind of like, oh, let's put something out, you know, but, you know, I would like to see them put some action behind that.
What do you think the role is that athletes can play right now?
You know, I think athletes could, you know, I see on Twitter that, you know, people are organizing meetings with their teams. I think that's dope. You know, definitely organize a meeting with the team and see how you guys can help, whether it's monetary or whether it's just your actions, whether it's, you know, speaking to the local, you know, police, anything. You know, I just believe anything, as long as we look uniformed and we're together on it, I think it'll be taken more seriously.
Thanks so much for coming on, Brandon.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.